Warning, this podcast contains rude, crude, and prude language, which might burn your ears if you listen to it for too long. Listener discretion is advised.
Every time I play Massacre, I want like 28 dudes in the deck, yeah.
I think people are just playing it in
you want to see
as, dudes. As something that they can attack.
Fucking ocean. A fucking ocean of dudes is what I want with Massacre.
A black sea of dudes.
That's better.
Welcome to the A-Team Podcast, brought to you by ManaDeprived.com and 60cards.com. Check us out. This week's episode has been brought to you by Forbes Hobbies.
In 2010, a crack Magic playing unit was sent to prison by the DCI Court for crimes they didn't commit. These men promptly escaped from a federal pound-me-in-the-ass prison to the Canadian underground. Today, still wanted by Wizards of the Coast, they survive as podcasters of fortune. If you have a problem, if no one else can help, and if you can find them, maybe you can listen to The A-Team. KYT.
Everybody was metagaming against each other because we saw each other's decks.
Jay Boosh.
I'm not going to ask a homeless guy for a deck idea, okay? I'm going to give the guy some change, and, you know, I'll probably half my sandwich.
Smitty.
Just completely edit out Jay Boosh, like, out of the whole thing.
Scotty.
But what is it with people that live in French countries that like blue-white control? Are you guys just, like, do you have that big of a chip on your shoulder? Like, what is it?
And now, the A-Team.
Hey everyone, welcome to the A-Team Podcast, episode number 32. We took a small break here because we couldn't find Jesse. He went missing, but somehow he's re-emerged, and we're back again.
Holla!
Back again with Jesse, Jay, and Scott, your favorite podcasters.
What's up?
Of course, this weekend, the big event, one of the biggest events of the year for a competitive Magic player, is National Qualifiers, previously known as Regionals. And all four of us, actually maybe just three of us, or even just two, actually. Which one of you are actually planning to play this weekend?
I am, obviously. I'm going to make it if I can. We got a cruise coming up in May, so we'll see.
I will be playing next weekend in my local game store qualifiers. Life got in the way this weekend. But I'm probably better served in a smaller tournament where I can run good and get away with it instead of trying to top eight a fucking 10-round monster. So,
yeah, I think it's going to be pretty – I don't know what to expect, right, with this new the new format in terms of there only being four in the entire country. So it would be interesting to see the attendance. Do you expect 10 rounds in Toronto? That's possible.
Oh, yeah. No, it'll be at least 9.
And, will Nina make it through more than 3? Or what?
I don't know. I don't think she's coming for this one. I think she's just trying to like grind in little shorter tournaments while she can and pad her rating enough.
Gotta protect that rating.
Yep.
Jay sounded so serious when he said that. Well, yeah, I'm excited to see how many people are going to be there in the Montreal one as well. Hopefully, 10 rounds will be a monster. I don't remember how many rounds were last year. Definitely not 10, because then you'd have to go, man, 8-1-1. That's a pretty sick record.
That's what I'm saying. That's a pretty steep. That's a steep calling for most people.
But that is.
Even if you are the best player in the room, 8-1-1 is just wow.
Yeah.
So Scott, I'm just gonna pass it on to you.
Well, in the spirit of one of our favorite podcasts, Limited Resources, shout out to Marshall and Ryan. Those guys are legit. Every night before the major pre-releases, they go through their monster cast, where they go through all of the cards in the pre-release set, and they walk through each one and evaluate each card on a card-by-card basis. And so what I thought we'd do is we'd try to like take the crown this year. And, you know, we want to make this the most downloaded podcast, so you guys, like, download it 3, 4, 5 times. But we're going to go through the metagame breakdown, like, in fucking A-Team styles, bitches. You know what I'm talking about? So we're gonna go through all of the Tier 1 decks. We're going to talk about what makes them good, what makes them crap, what they're hard to, what they're soft to, and, you know, what their play lines look like. And then we'll go through some of the 1.5s, and we'll mention some of the outliers that you should probably at least have an eye out for and understand that they may actually show up. So that's what we're up to this evening. We've got a long night ahead of us, so buckle up. Drink the Red Bull. If you guys are listening to this on your way over to the Nats queue, hopefully you were listening to this while you're grinding away your matches on Moto on Friday night. And let's get to it.
Sounds great.
So, number one, we've got enemy number one. We've got the dreaded Cobblade. Whether it
blue
be
white.
The blue-white variant, or, of course, we'll also mention some finer points about the Esper Splash. But, KYT, why don't you take it away and talk to us a little bit about what you feel Cobblade's most powerful strengths are as a deck?
I think its most powerful strength, for sure, is its ability to have the strategy against most decks. The fact that you can go in and a guy has this sort of junky deck, you can beat like all the bad decks, I feel, with the deck. So I'm really happy with that. Confident that you have the tools, whether it be beating down with Stoneforge with a sword or beating him via Jace, like Planeswalkers via Jace and Gideon. So you have many ways to attack a deck. So I never go in feeling like I'm completely dead except for mono red, but it just feels like you have all the tools to beat anything, and that's a deck that I'd like to bring. Like, you never want to sit there, you know, auto losing a round, and Cobblade puts you in a position to beat any opponent.
So what you're saying is you feel it's got a really good set of plays, sort of like through early game, mid game, and then late game.
Right. Okay. I mean, it does struggle against like the blue-white version, strict mono-red. It's pretty 50-50-ish with Boros, and definitely has trouble with Lotus Cobra decks. If the Lotus Cobra deck is able to take advantage of having a Lotus Cobra turn two, and then on the subsequent turn actually do something where I can't, you know, reset the board or recover from, like playing a Jace earlier and just being out of leak range, or just being able to have that mana to be able to play Jace with mana leak backup. So those usually are the decks, and that's why we have versions that I've been trying to play Oust, because Lotus Cobra is that scary turn two for us, especially on the draw. Like, I fear that.
That's its weakest. That's definitely, in my opinion, playing against it a ton. I haven't played with it a ton, but I've played against it a whole crap ton. It's that weak spot removal. Like, it doesn't have that. It doesn't really do anything to interact against you necessarily early. I mean, I guess it has the spell pierces and mana leaks, but you can like freely cast creatures and know they're going to be safe. So that's like by far its weakest point, like when you're trying to build a deck against it or whatever, or just, you know, playing against it.
Right.
So, Jay, you've played a lot of Boros in your time, obviously, and you know, we're going to lean on your expertise there for sure, you know, in a couple other places as well, obviously. But when you've played against Cobblade, because I know you've played against it a lot. I mean, you played a lot against it in Toronto, right? Like, what do you feel are some of the most exploitable holes in the deck?
In Cobblade?
In Cobblade, yeah.
Well, like, it relies quite heavily on like swords. So, like, you can effectively negate their advantage if you, like, with Boros especially, because you have access to red and white to kill their artifacts. In Valakut, I found it pretty easy to exploit that weakness, because you have, you know, Tumble Magnets and Nature's Claim variants and all that kind of stuff. I think the other thing too is, like, if it, like Jesse was saying, because it doesn't have removal, I found a lot of times I was doing better against it, because, like, my creatures outclassed their creatures. Like, sure, they're sitting there and they have, you know, one or two or three or four turns to like chump block my guys with a hawk. But if they can't, like, if you put them on their heel, sometimes it can be difficult for them to regain some of that ground that they've lost. I mean, now you see them, like, Cobblade's a really, really funny meta in its own, because it's constantly changing. Like, it's the most changing deck I've seen in a long time. And I think it's partly because of Star City Games opens. But it's like changing all the time. But, you know, you'd see it come in with one or two wraths and then no wraths and then one wrath and two in the board and two wraths and one in the board. And condemns were never played and now condemns are being played. So, I mean, it's getting better against aggro because aggro
it
is
has to. To.
Like it has to, right?
Because it's awful against it.
Yeah. But but those were the biggest holes I was seeing in it were just, you know, I mean, if you can outclass their creatures and, you know, kind of put them on defense, it's a deck that, as far as I know anyway, doesn't like to be on defense.
Yeah. Real quick, let me squeeze in real quick. Since when did like it become difficult to outclass a 1/2 and a bunch of 1/1s?
Yeah, just, no, that's fair.
Ridiculous.
That's fair. So in my experience, and from what I've watching KYT and you and everybody grind these matches with this deck, I almost feel like Cobblade is a very it's a tempo deck. Like it is a tempo control deck without question. I mean, and I think it's a sort of Feast and Famine that really kind of, you know, shoots that advantage into the stratosphere, right? So how important is it? And it, from what I'm hearing from you guys, like Jesse and Jay, it's like if you can put Cobblade on its heels in the first three turns and force them to interact with you or die, right? So do something that forces them to, you know, that puts them at disadvantage so that they have to pay attention to you instead of focusing on their, you know, ideal three-turn setup, then you're probably increased your percentage to that matchup like by 70%, provided you've got an answer to Gideon. Like,
yeah.
Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah, it's pretty good.
Right? Like, I mean, they're going, like, turn one, Preordain, or... ideally, you're playing turn one, Colonnade. Anyways, and then you go, you're turn two, and you're going to go Mystic or Hawk, right? Like, but if you're going turn two Mystic, right, and you can then, on your turn, whether it be, you know, your turn three or their or your turn two, like, if you can put something in play or begin a line of play which they need to react to, then you're going to be way ahead, right? Like KYT is talking, he mentioned like the turn two Cobra, for example. Like you stick that and the Cobblade player has to go, whoa, I guess I need to hold my counter mana for this next turn. Otherwise, I'm going to get fist fucked, right?
Or you like play Stoneforge and you have to get my current namesake card, I guess, Mortarpod, to kill
Mortarpod!
It.
Mortarpod!
Right. And I think that's so that'll actually segue nicely. So that's a really awesome techie play, and I'm not all the lists are playing Mortarpod. I really like, you know, yours is so good. Just Mortarpod. Anyways, so talk to me about some of the tweaks that I think that people should be expecting. Maybe, you know, some of the small variants here and there. Like obviously some of them are playing two Feast and Famine, some of them are playing, you know, one sort of Body Mind, one Feast and Famine, others are playing Mortarpod. So,
also, as an additional question to that, KYT, I was watching you play some of your games against Valakut, and you were going and getting Sword of Feast and Famine instead of Sword of Body and Mind. And I would like to know, A, why you were going to get Body and Mind, or not Body and Mind versus specifically Valakut, and B, why Body and Mind isn't being played anymore.
Is that real life, or?
What?
You watched me play in real life?
No, this was on Modo.
Okay, so current versions of Cobblade do not play Body and Mind,
right?
Because of the discard factor to
with Vengevine coming back and some more relevance, Body and Mind tends to be a little bit worse. And the only thing it's really protecting anybody from is Jace bouncing, and that's, although relevant, it's not worth the slot when people are packing hate for the sword. You now just want to have two Feast and Famine because arguably against all of the other decks, it's just better.
But why? That's what I'm asking.
Okay, so the Feast and Famine gives you your tempo boost. Whereas against against Valakut in a silo, Body Mind is far superior, without question. Because you just mill out like five mountains and they fucking lose, right? So nice Valakut, you're done.
Well, that's what I was thinking.
Right.
And that's
and
always
I,
the problem.
And I agree with you. And in Valakut, that's correct. But I think that outside of the Valakut matchup, Feast or Famine is going to be far superior.
Just because it allows you to tap out.
Yeah.
Like in a lot of situations, like for sure, against, even though guys like Alex Hain, who would think that even he would take feast and famine against Valakut. I think he'd say that. I think body and mind, from my experience, is more powerful. It's something I'd rather do. And then, because there's two ways you beat them. You either mill all their threats or mountains, or you just beat them down with wolves and whatever you have equipped, and they're on a shorter clock.
Yeah, the mill factor is very relevant.
I mean, and against, like, when I play Valakut, if anybody gets, like, when I see a turn two Mystic and then they go and get, a Feast of Famine, I'm like, okay, not a big deal. But when they go get a Body in Mind, I'm like, I guess I just lose.
Like, I'm almost, like, I don't play Valakut, but the card I want to see more on turn two, I'd rather see Stoneforge hit. Like, and this is someone who I've only played Cobblade a couple of times. Like, I'm always trying to beat it, right? So I'm playing against it a ton. And when they drop a turn two Stoneforge Mystic, I'm always much happier than Squadron Hawk, because I'm not going to spend my removal on the Squadron Hawk. It's like saving them 4 damage or whatever, depending on what deck I'm playing, which is, you know, relevant because it's either a Vengevine or a Koth. So, yeah. I hate Squadron Hawk. It's a really good card there on turn two.
Why? Like, to...
Why? Because, like, it just buys you time to do what you're trying to do. And Stoneforge, like, I know I have, like, 2 more turns to set up just, like, fantastic beats where you're not going to
remove
my guys and stuff. Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
You're more afraid of them just... fogging your best guy
exactly.
for the next couple of turns.
Right. Exactly. Yeah.
Going back to why I prefer Feast and Famine and why the strategy and why it's so important if they discard it or I want it, like, sometimes I guess this might be a rare scenario, but like sometimes, like, I test against Jesse a bit with his rapid start. Sometimes you just win by playing Jace, untap, and then Gideon, and then you feel like you can't lose. And then you find another Gideon, and then Jesse goes, what the?
Yeah, that was pretty ridiculous.
Yeah, I don't know if you guys remember, but, like, Mana Flayer was a really dirty enabler card. It's really nice to be able to have it as a one-sided card.
Right.
And that's what you're getting on the sword.
Yeah, so a lot of the times I win by playing 2 Planeswalkers that turn. Even in game states where it seems like I can't win. Were they, like, against Jesse, I felt like I was just gonna die, but I was able. He had, I forget, 6 creatures, like Vengevine, a bunch of Cobras, and maybe even 2 Vengevines, right, Jesse?
Yeah.
And I'm able to Gideon, force him to attack, and I'm like swinging with Colonnade and Stoneforge with a sword, untapping, you know, play a Jace, get another Gideon, well, like.
In Toronto, that one guy, he went rip a 6 land, play a Sun Titan, get something back.
Oh, like, yeah.
Like a Journey to Nowhere or something, and then play, like, attack you, play Inferno Titan all in one turn. I was like, okay, I guess I lose. Like,
yeah.
Can't really do anything about that.
So, okay. So,
Scott, I got to answer your first question, unless you're continuing.
No, go ahead.
I think people started to play Condemn at some point, and now they're coming down. And the list that Brad Nelson and Jerry T are recommending in the recent articles, and the one that put Raptor in the top 8. And I think Matt Nass actually played Cobblade also. He actually finished in 9th with the exact 75, and that also had Condemns. So people playing against Cobblade should be wary of Condemn, especially in the mirror, where you tend to sometimes equip and assume that you're going to be able to untap, and that can just totally blow you out of the game. They just condemn, they untap, right? And then you just, like, sort of tap yourself out to try to get that attack in. They attack you, or they land the Jace in. And so Condemn is a card to be played around.
Yeah, and if you're we'll come to that as well when we talk about our next culprit, but there's definitely evidence of people starting to play around that card, that's for sure. So, all right, so sideboard tech, real quick, what sort of so obviously your weakest matchups are mono red and obviously the Cobra decks,
right?
So what what are your absolute sideboard nuts that you should be expecting games 2 and 3 coming in with Cobblade?
Definitely, but I don't know how a lot of these lists survive and they swear about not needing core Firewalkers. But I always, in the last three tournaments I've played Cobblade, the one deck that's kicked me out or beat me in the top 8 or just put me out of top 8 was Mono Red. And I feel Core Walker, Firewalker needs to be there. I mean, I faced one of our listeners, Ben C, at the Canadian Magic Tour. And he ended up beating me turn 1 Goblin Guide, turn 2, 2 more Goblin Guides in game 1. And he went on to beat me, but then he lost his the next round to Frank, who just was playing Boros and just sided in Core Firewalkers. I mean, that card, I guess people say that it doesn't give you much percentage in your other matchups. Like, you never bring it in, I guess. But it just wins. Like, sometimes turn two, it feels like you just win unless they have, like, Peerless Mirror plus Arc Trail. Like, I can't really think of too many situations where I wouldn't be extremely happy and think I'm gonna win with just
it's also like it's also super good against Boros when you suit it up with a sword or against Valakut when you suit it up with a sword, and like not like especially against Valakut, like there's no, some Valakut lists are playing Tumble Magnet, but other than that there's no answer to that.
Yeah, just to throw it out there too, Sword of Body Mind plus Core Firearcha equals pro rug deck. Yeah.
So I guess I gotta bring that in.
Yeah, it's fucking terrible.
Well, other than that, you know, there's mixture, like Ousts are seeing play just because Lotus Cobra, and then there's a mixture of stuff for the mirror, like Volition Reigns, extra Jace Bellerins, Sun Titan, and it's strange. I'd like Jay's opinion, if he can get, if he's had experience with it, is how good I felt Boros. When I was playtesting against it 2 nights ago, that brings Sun Titan in, and it helped me a lot because they would side into the LSV version where they go big. They play Gideons themselves, and I'm happy to land Sun Titan because Gideon can't deal with a Sun Titan. But Sun Titan costs 6, so I always question myself whether I actually want it or not, but it's been superb every time I could cast it.
Yeah,
I mean, I don't mind playing against it. Like, it is, it can be a beating. I mean, it just depends on the situation too, right? Like, when I played against Ben C's friend, other Ben, Nervous Ben, we can call him because he was pretty shaky. He's a cool dude though. Like, he got that situation where he was able to play, you know, 2 in a row, and my board presence, it was later on in the game, and I had misplayed a couple times. Like, I had the win, and I pretty much like gave it to him. He played really well, but I probably made 4 misplays, I think I counted. It was late in the day and I was just tired and stuff, but
so you totally punted.
So I did. I punted that match, like, okay. And he knew it too. Like, he was like, "Oh my god, I can't believe like what you're doing." And I was like, "Yeah, pretty much I'm the worst."
I can't believe what you're doing.
Like, I'm pretty much the worst. And but so, I mean, I think that the 6 mana is relevant. I think that's a lot. It can be the beating against the decks that you want it to be really good against, like against those decks that are killing all your dudes. I mean, Baneslayer might just be better than it. I think. I think Gideon being able to deal with it is relevant, but I don't know, like, how many people are going to see that. The other thing is that, like, I've been playing Gideon in my Boros list for a long time, just like I did with Boros, and by no means did I pioneer that. I'm just saying I've been playing it for a long time. I'm trying to cover my ass for against Doug trolls. what was I talking about? Oh yeah, so I've been playing it in Boros for a long time. I find that, like, more often than not, like, when you bring it in, it actually doesn't do what you want it to do. So I don't think that you need to worry about it that much. And again, like, anytime I've ever played Boros and somebody stuck a Baneslayer Angel, I've just, like, entered scoop phase effectively. Yeah. like it's pretty close. Like, you like, there's not a whole lot you can do. Like, you have Journeys maybe, and I, like, again, more ripping really well story is, like, every Wednesday somebody goes Baneslayer and I just go fuck. And then I turn over my top card and it's a journey and I win. But like, and I mean, like, I only play two and I can count, like, I can't even count on two hands how many times I've gotten away with that.
So I don't think you should really expect, unless you're like playing in a Cobblade mirror, that's when you're going to see Sun Titan coming out of the board, right? Like, because realistically, or the control mirror, I guess, right? Like, does that make sense? It's only in the games that are going really, really long that you really are going to be bringing in the Sun Titan, correct?
Yeah.
That is correct.
Yeah. So, I mean, the Cobblade mirrors are long and thankless and
arduous.
That's really good. I really like that. That's the new one of the day. but before it was no. Yeah, so I think that, you know, if you're sitting down and you're going to play Cobblade, be ready for the mirror, understand the mirror, because I think it's probably one of your worst matchups, right? Like, between the mirror and worst is just most demanding, most grueling. Not necessarily the worst. Like, Mono Red's the worst, but thankfully it'll be over for you in 15 minutes, so don't worry about it.
yes.
You know, but, like, the Cobblade mirror is going to time. You must win game one. If you do not win game one in the Cobblade mirror, you're probably in a lot of trouble.
Yeah.
Well, that's great that you mentioned that, Scott, because I've been discussing with some of the stronger local players, and they would, if they know they're going to lose game one, they're going to scoop
early
to be able to beat them game two and have a chance to. Like, I had another friend at the Canadian Magic Tour. He took too long, right? He thought he might be able to squeak game one, but then game two, he was going to win, but that went to time, so he ended up losing the match. And we later talked, and he's like, yeah, I definitely should have conceded a lot earlier than I did. So that's a pointer out there, because some players are really slow, too, with Cobblade. So.
Yeah, you play gay decks, suffer the consequences.
So
play basketball.
So be ready to call the judge if you know that, you know, especially if you're in the draw brackets with these with if you're in the draw bracket playing against somebody with Cobblade, like, call the judge within like 3 minutes. Say, I need you to watch a Master Soul play. Like, if you even suspect it remotely, like, call them right away. Tip from the Scrubland podcast. So I've been busy this week. So let's talk a little bit about the Esper Splash and then the Red Splash. What are some of the advantages and disadvantages of doing it? I really only want to take about maybe 5 minutes each for this, so let's just kind of like do it quickly. Obviously, you gain Inquisition. Obviously, you get hard removal, Doomblade, right, or Go for the Throat.
Does it even play those, though?
Yeah.
Or only in the board?
No, there's some mix. It's like the whole, it's like blue-white where they play a mix of, you know, 3-4 different removal spells. Same sort of thing with the black version.
Okay.
But definitely looking at Inquisition, which is solid. Obviously, the mana base is a little shakier, so you might be able to, you know, disrupt mana a little bit, and the man land is very relevant for them, so make sure you can kill that one on sight.
Well, I think KYT would be the expert here, but I'd really like to know if... I'd really like to know what he thinks, because I know that you're a big supporter of just the blue-white. But what I've heard basically come down to in the Esper build is, like, if you don't get Inquisition or Duress in the first turn, like, then you've, like, then it doesn't really make a difference. And then if blue-white's playing Tectonic Edges, like, how do you even... Yeah. Then what do you do, right? So, it, like, is that why you're playing just blue-white or what?
I'm just playing... I'm mainly playing blue-white just because it's... The mana is just more consistent. Yeah. And I think I'm reading AJ Soccer's article that's going to come up on Friday, and he basically said the same thing I did in our last cast, where I was stressing consistency over power when it comes to believing if you're one of the better players in the room. And then I think in his article tomorrow, he just says, if you know, you just need to play something that's, if you're better than anyone, that's going to give you a chance to beat them, and then you want the more consistent deck in blue-white. But with that said, the Esper deck has many advantages, and they're better against red or the fast decks because they're more active. I'm not sitting back trying to condemn a Lotus Cobra. I'm actually Inquisition. You don't get to play that Cobra, period.
Or Disfigure, which is just like straight up kill you whether you attack or not, right?
Yeah. And then I can turn to Stoneforge with like more confidence. And then there's always, you know, late middle game, because the game goes long, mid-game Duresses or Inquisition to make sure you can just dump that Jace down. And then, so it's real powerful, no doubt. And Jerry, in his article, mentions how people just complain too much about the mana base and they should just work it. But I think, you know, PV, LSV, a lot of people believe that blue white's just, the mana's just better, even if you try to tune the black version. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. But the black version is more powerful.
I think the other thing to make mention of too is that the blue black white is proactive, whereas the blue white is still very reactive, and those different lines of play can potentially be very deceiving when you're looking for the optimal play, right? Like the optimal play for the blue black deck at turn two or three is going to be radically different than the optimal play for the blue white list, and I think that it's just like the way and the style that they're played that really plays to that.
Yeah.
So
I just feel I might play the black version just because I'm so worried about losing to really fast aggro stuff. But until that happens, no, blue white is still my choice at this moment if the tournament were to start right now.
Yeah. You just have to play more Day of Judgments.
all the metagame analysis and like top decks I've seen have mostly been blue-white. Like, PV's article was hilarious on Channel Fireball. Like, he's like, top 16 list, like, blue-white. Like, 15th. He put in, like, caps and, like, fucking 16-point font. Boros! And he's like, yeah, that's me.
Yeah.
There was, like, only one black splash, I think, in the top 16.
Yeah. So, let's... So I think that's pretty good for Cobblade. So I think the lessons to take away are, were pretty relevant. There's a lot of them to go over. Let's talk a little bit about Valakut, if we don't mind. So Jay, why don't you take us down the wonderful trip of the Molten Pinnacle?
Oh, I don't know if I'm the right player for this. I played Valakut last week. I played Nina's list. And as KYT will tell you, that's the worst. It's just the worst. So I've decided...
When you pull out four Valakuts and two mountains, it kind of makes a difference, bro.
Hey, that's not the right list. That's a different list. Nina's list is bad regardless of that.
We troll you so hard. It's
wait,
so
for
bad.
Some background story, Jay and I were playing on Moto last night. I was testing a new deck, and I'm like attacking with Vengevines, and he drops a Primeval or something, and he's already got like a Valakut out and like two mountains, and he pulls out two Valakuts. I'm like, dude, what the fuck are you doing?
I think,
like you need like two of those things, maybe only one. Like
you're at 12, I think, too.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The thing was, I don't know, like I didn't know what his life total was. And B, I was watching a movie. And yeah. C, I was under the impression that if he removes one of my, like the only thing I had in my hand was Primeval Titan, like, and then I had no cards. Like I was dead, like, and I was dead on board. My thought was if he removes my Primeval Titan and I rip anything that lets me go get mountains, I can still win. And then I was like, oh, wait, he's only 12, so I should probably should have just played better.
Probably should have just won right there. Yeah, it would have been good.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so Valakut.
So the most popular version of Valakut you're going to see, like the good version of Valakut that you guys are going to see, is going to be the one that plays 8 Titans. So better watch for that. Basically, it's playing... 4 Primevals, 4 Infernos. Some lists are going down to 7 Titans and playing a main deck Miser's Slime for swords in game 1. And that's something that, like, again, like, I'm always going to question this, but, like, why doesn't anybody play any main deck artifact hate? Like, everybody knows you're going to be playing Boros with swords, and you're going to be playing, you know, I mean, you can be playing against numerous decks with Tumble Magnet, and you're going to be playing against Cobblade with swords. So, like, I don't understand what the big deal would be playing in a green deck, playing a main deck... slime. I don't see the big deal. It's something that people are constantly telling me, you know, is not correct. But I've got some friends at my local store that, you know, they play 7 Titans and a slime. You're seeing the resurgence of Harrow as well. So that's something that you might want to, especially if you're a Cobblade player, you might want to pay attention to. I don't like Harrow. I never have liked Harrow, and I still cut Harrow.
It's in conjunction, of course, with Colony Heart Expedition, right? Which is a really big piece of the puzzle right now.
Yeah, and so what's happening is, you know, you're seeing, you're, like, the thing is, some Cobblade players are getting complacent, and they're playing, they're going to tap out because, like KYT said, they're banking on a Feast and Famine trigger. So they're tapping out, and then they attack you. And what you do is you can then harrow with a Kalni Heart and either get your you know, your play on board so that you can win next turn or kill them or kill their attacker because you've just gotten X amount of mana. So that's something that, like, as a Cobblade player, you should definitely be paying attention to and watching. So far, what I've seen as well is that most versions of the deck are playing five, like, trap effects. So they're playing generally, like, either a 3-2, a 3-1, or a 4-1 split between Green Sun Zenith and trap. So, like, again, especially if they have a Miser Slime, that's definitely something that, you know, can definitely be back-breaking if you don't account for that. But basically, I mean, Valakut's Valakut. Like, there's no other secret tech in there. Some lists you're gonna see Koth in the sideboard. And, like, that's something that's interesting, because, I mean, you are playing 11 or 12 mountains. So, I mean, he could be good. He could enable an early Titan as well. And the other thing is, like, Inferno Titan, a lot of times, like, you have to pay attention. A lot of people are going to start targeting your Valakuts with their slimes or with tech edges. And I found a lot of times I can bait people into doing that if I have Inferno Titans in hand. I mean, you never want to be, like offering free trades of your Valakuts. But if you're keeping them, if you're you know, getting them to tap out because they think that you don't have any Valakuts so they can afford for you to play a Primeval Titan or et cetera, and then you can, you know, you can Inferno Titan them out. That's really good. Like, it now has, you know, ways to just actually kill you with just damage. And the other thing that I really like about playing the Inferno Titan, something that I never considered before, but I really like about them, is that they can kill Hawks that have swords on them, which is really relevant because Pyroclasm doesn't do that. So you'll see some lists play Slagstorm as well. So in game 2 and 3, you want to definitely watch out for Slagstorm, and you want to maybe leave your Spell Pierce mana up for that, because that's just as bad as walking into a dodge. There's not too many big angry green men either anymore. So some of the lists are playing Gaea's Revenge, but you don't, like, I don't know why, but you're just not seeing it very much. I think it just costs too much. One thing that you do want to play around though is some of the Cobblade variants. This is something that, like, somebody has been telling me, but I don't know how relevant this is. At a Nats qualifier, how many shitty decks are there going to be? Probably lots, right? Like, because it's only $30 and everyone can go. Like, are you guys anticipating that there's going to be lots of garbage?
Okay, so the idea is that your deck really should be able to weather the jank decks for rounds 1 and 2. And okay, if you can weather 2 rounds of jank decks, you're probably going to be okay.
Okay, because that's the thing. So some players here, with the Esper Cobblade, have been playing like a Miser's, like, Mora side as well, because they have the black. So you want to watch out for that. So in game 2 and 3, if you're the Valakut player, you want to increase your threat density by playing, you know, like if you're already playing, say, like 8 Titans, you might want to drop that to like 6 and then play like 2 guys that are different so that you can survive a Memora side. Because if you can't survive a Memora side, then you, like, I mean, then you get hosed. So, that's still a really awful card to play against when you're Valakut. Like, if they get early, sort of Body and Mind or early Memora side on you, it can be a pretty uphill battle. Like, I know I've been testing lots on Modo with Valakut, and anytime I see Cobblade go turn 2 Stormforge Mystic, get sort of Body and Mind, I'm fucked. Like, they're like, unless you're holding the removal, or it's game 2 and 3 and you're holding the artifact removal, and even then, like, they just mana leak that, or they just fucking, like, play around that or whatever, right? Like, like, sort of Body and Mind just kills you, so make sure you have answers for that. And one way that I found to answer that is, like, I ended up playing the Miser's version of Slime with Green Sun Zenith, mm-hmm. and then I have another Slime in the board, and then I have 2 Nature's Claims, and sometimes three, just because you need to have one. Valakut can't sit around and get milled out.
Yeah.
So. Yeah.
Good. Lists playing Avengers Zendikar still a couple here, you know, maybe one or two depending on the build.
Yeah, like it depends on the build. Like I think for some reason you're seeing people get away from it and go towards just six Titans or eight Titans. But it is something that you should be prepared for sure. Now, the thing is, in
Cobblade, could that have anything? Sorry, go ahead.
Well, I'm just gonna say you're in Cobblade. You're seeing the resurgence of Dodge come back.
Yeah.
And so Avengers Zendikar becomes worse.
Right. So, and I think that with the less of the K-Reds and the less vampires that we've seen lately, too, obviously they're all playing Mark of Mutiny.
Mm-hmm,
so,
mm-hmm.
I mean, if there's less of those decks and less Marks running around, then Titans are obviously safe again.
Yeah, and that's something that you see a lot of times is, like, this deck still kind of can die stone cold to somebody Mark of Mutiny-ing your Titan.
Avengers is a safe play in that situation.
Yeah, exactly. Same with even Gaea's Revenge. You can live through... you don't want somebody getting an Inferno Titan and killing you. So that's something that, I mean, Avenger of Zendikar also can help with at least chump blocking. But yeah, it's something that you definitely want to be, you know, you want to play around, you want to be prepared for.
Good. So major plans of disruption, obviously, swords, Sword of Body Mind's really good against Valakut. Memora side, obviously, anything you can do to neuter the Prime Titans is pretty good. But
yep.
I mean, I find that even just because people are playing the heavy Titan builds, just Memora siding Prime Titan doesn't mean you're out of the woods yet, folks. It just means that you're not dead next turn.
The other thing is, like, you got to make sure that, like if you're playing anybody that you know or you're playing any kind of, like, crafty player, you want to make sure that in games 2 and 3, like, people will often leave in their Memora sides. And then they'll kind of, like, look at you smugly and they'll go, like, turn 4, turn 3 Memora side, naming Primeval Titan. And they'll be like, haha. And, or they'll name, like, Inferno Titan even. And like you just want to be careful when you're that player that you make sure you pay attention to what's in their deck, because a lot of people what they'll start doing is they'll play 1-ofs and 2-ofs and 3-ofs of other cards,
mm-hmm.
just because they know that your Memora side is coming.
Yeah. Yep. Agreed. So also, like I said earlier, Colony Heart Expedition also, guys, is a very very important spell for Valakut, because it basically allows them to set up an insane chain of inevitability.
Yeah.
Which if you find yourself, if you realize you're behind on it, it's already too late. You're just done. So if you have the spell pierce for that, like turn 1, probably good. If not, good luck.
I've also had some pretty good ideas with Valakut. Pound sign, ban Valakut.
Yeah. It's clearly the most oppressive combo deck in the format, like without question. And
what's the only combo deck? Well, I guess there's Quest. That's not real, but.
But it, I mean, it's holding down a whole other subsection of decks right now, and I mean it'll go soon, and that's fine, and that's probably why they figured that they are okay to reprint Titans, because if they just get rid of Valakut, then that's fine.
Yeah, I mean, Primeval Titan doesn't really have a home without Valakut.
Yeah.
What's real up, quick interruption. I know it's not even the theme of the night, but the deck list of the day is on list on Daily MTG.
Really?
Swear to God, go to Daily MTG, Daily Deck List, card for card. It's my list.
Is it somebody that you gave that list to, or did somebody steal
That's
it again?
The guy who played it made day 2 at the Grand Prix. It's PlayTalker92, I think, on Twitter. So, anyways, we can continue. Sorry, I'm pumped.
Oh.
Getting famous.
Yeah, too bad there was no mention of you there. No, I'm sorry. That
okay,
would have been good.
One last question on Valakut. I know it's been suggested when it first was, I think, released as a card, Thrun in the sideboard. And I have to admit, even though it's become known as a sketchy Valakut sideboard choice, I've actually played against it and actually lost one game against it because my guys, I just don't have enough guys to block him, and him with, I think he was just beating my face down, I guess, without any swords or anything. But Jay, do you think Thrun is good at all?
I think in the meta, like, Thrun can be like an absolute beating.
I had Condemns and Oust in my hand, and I'm like, can't, well, I definitely had Oust, not Condemns. Post-Cypher.
Yeah, like I think that like Thrun can just be he can be really degenerate. The problem with Thrun is that like he still is green. So any sword that you're using right now, like just like hoses him, right. Gets through him, and he can't block flyers. So like he's kind of narrow in terms of a sideboard slot. Like I would rather just play a slime with Death Touch or something. But I mean, like Thrun is good against the matchups like Boros. He's good against red deck wins. He's good against I don't know, what else do we even have? Quest maybe he's good against. I don't know. blue black, he could like, I mean, he's okay against blue black because you know they have Titans and Wyrmcoils. He's not, obviously he's not the greatest because you don't want to be just giving them infinite life or infinite guys, but at least he's a blocker. Like I think the thing with Thrun is just that like I think he would be better positioned in a deck where he can attack with, you know, equipment of some kind. He like in Valakut he's just a wall, and I think the thing with a sideboard card like of a Thrun wall, it might be even better just to play Wall of Tanglecord because that blocks flyers, it gets around swords, and it enables your Overgrown Battlements even as like a little tiny extra bonus. Like I like to me that just sounds better, does it not?
Yeah,
I mean I guess they also can't go for the throat your Wall of Tanglecord. I don't know. I've never played either. Like I didn't like Thrun in when I was playing Nina's list. It has a Thrun. I didn't like it. Yeah. And I mean I've been talking about Wall of Tanglecord in my like I've been mulling it over and talking to people about it. And I just have never gotten the balls up to try it. I guess I could, you know, brew and try it, but I'd rather if somebody else did that. And then
it's really good against my deck.
I think it is. Like what do you do against a Wall of Tanglecord? Like you oust it, I guess,
yeah.
Or you Day of Judgment, or you waste a. Like, what like, do you do?
Or, like, think about having to bring in Divine Offerings just for that and Tumble yeah. Magnets. Like
that seems...
Yeah, Jace Bounce if you have to, right?
Yeah, like, I don't know. It just sounds... It doesn't seem just amazing to
it
me.
Is
like,
real,
I don't
it is
know.
Real
So, yeah. So, that's... I mean, that's something that I would consider.
If they're running the Battlement Ramp, then you bring it in anyway, right? Because it's also then assists your speed up. So, that's good.
I guess we can just briefly talk about Mono Green Eldrazi, Scott, since it's like basically the same cards. Have you seen it being played? I've actually tested, we posted a video on Mana Deprive where Doug P pretty much owns me, but that's because I haven't been playing against Mystifying Maze enough. And when you have Maze and a Wall of Tanglecord going, that's, you know, I'm not getting a sword hit anytime soon. Unless I have Tectonic Edge, like I have need a solution for the maze, I need a solution for the wall. So I feel that deck, as Raphael Levy said in his article, is definitely favored against Cobblade.
Oh, without question, it's favored against Cobblade. But I think that the issue is that it still suffers against all of the major aggro lists, like all of the major aggro lists. And then I don't think it has much game as well against. The other, like, if your opponent has an answer for Eldrazi or a strategy to get around a resolved Eldrazi, you're not going to win against most of the decks in the format. Cobblade sure dies all the time because you guys don't have said answer to said Eldrazis. But I don't know. It's fine enough deck. It's posting up reasonable results. It's always had really powerful results, but it's always severely underrepresented it. So, I mean, is it a worse Valakut deck? Well, you know, there are a lot of people that would argue it is. It's softer to aggro, I guess, without the red burn. It can be. But, I mean, they're not playing Aulis Dust in those lists either, though, right? So
no.
I mean...
But, I mean, like, when I was playing Boros, there was this guy at our local store that, like, he just wouldn't stop playing Mono Green Eldrazi. He's been playing it for, like... He's been playing it since it was a deck. Like, since Rise, he's just been playing this. And it's, like, when I was playing Boros, it was, like, super annoying, too. It was, like, if you don't nut draw them, they'll go down to, you know, four life, and then they'll just kill you. Like, they just win.
Yeah.
right? Like they'll just cast an Emrakul, or they'll go down to 8 life or something, or 6 life, and then they'll just cast. They have enough walls that they can just chump, and then they cast Primeval Titan, and then they can play in like an Ulamog for 8 or for 6, right? And you're like, oh fuck, that's awesome. and I've seen some of them play like a Miser's Artisan of Kozilek as well. And they just go and get back like the Titans that you're killing, or get back. Yeah, like, and it's
just,
by the
way,
like, oh.
Summoning Trap is 10 times scarier in mono green Eldrazi deck.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Right. So if you're playing against Eldrazi green, I guess truthfully the scariest card is Summoning Trap.
Probably. Yeah. Yep, I would say so.
Yep.
so play around Summoning Trap and win before in turn 8. You'll be
yeah,
fine.
Exactly. Don't let them resolve Titans.
I think it's funny, though. I wonder what decks it actually loses to compared to Valkut. I know Valkut can win faster and can probably climb out of its hole faster, but it seems like you just bring in all these walls, Tumble Magnets, and Obstinate Bailoffs. In theory, sounds like it might be enough, but I guess it's not, because I haven't played the deck extensively to know what to be afraid of. But like, if you're playing 0/6s and 4/4s gaining 4 life, I would assume you get there somehow.
Wait, sorry, we're talking about mono green Eldrazi,
right? Right,
bringing those. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, like it's the other thing is like they benefit a lot from Wall of Tanglecord, and. And like you said, like they just bring in Obstinate Bailoffs, and then the other thing is like you also can't mill them like you can with Valakut. Like, not that you would ever want to try that, but they're not susceptible to that, right? You mill an Eldrazi, they just shuffle it back in. Yeah. Like, it's not a big, like, you really have to be able to finish them. If you can't finish them, then you know you're fucked, because their long game is better than yours.
It's the best in the meta right now. Their long game is the best in the meta, hands down.
Yeah. Yeah.
So what does this deck actually lose to?
Aggro, probably.
I don't even know about that. Like, I think
it's not the best deck. It loses to Valakut. Like, it straight up
loses. It also loses to Valakut, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, right? Oh, like because every other deck except Cobblade.
Exactly. Valakut, honestly, Valakut is so much faster than this deck. With the addition of the Colony Hearts and all the rest of the crap, like, it goes off far before... green Eldrazi does, and the mono green deck can't interact at all.
Well, the other thing is that, like, when you're playing Valakut, you can profitably attack into mono green Eldrazi no matter what they have, because you can just go get your shit and kill them with a Kalni Heart, right? Like, they can't do that. Like, unless they have an Eldrazi, they can't do anything. So.
Yeah. So, and I don't know, I mean... Does it do fine? Are red decks playing Flame Slash?
Nope. That's a sorcery, bad. Bro.
Yeah, but yeah, I guess now that Wall of Omens is out, Flame Slash is out too, right? That's too bad.
Yep, just like Forked Bolt.
Yeah, handles Overgrown Battlement just fine, though.
Although, like, I don't understand why Forked Bolt is played under, like, played less than Pyroclasm. And then Pyroclasm is played less than Arc Trail. Like, they're both, all three of those cards are sorceries, and they all effectively do the same thing. I mean, Arc Trail's a little bit better because it can get rid of an X2, but there's not really many of those that you're killing, like, in the decks that you're bringing it in, right? Like, I mean, if I'm talking about, say, like, Voros and Valakut, like, you're bringing it in against aggro where most of that stuff's an X1. You know, maybe you get a Goblin Guide or something with an Arc Trail, but you could get that with a Pyroclasm too. So I don't really know why Pyroclasm has become, like, the redheaded stepchild.
In what deck, though? For
in Valakut sideboards, because it used to be there.
Pyroclasm has played the shit out of it in Rug, right?
Yeah, and like in Boros, you don't play Pyroclasm anymore. You play Arc Trail, which is good because you don't kill your own guys. But like at the same time, you can play Forked Bolt.
Right, but Arc Trail's better than Forked Bolt.
Sort of, but that's what I'm saying. Like, the only thing
there's really not much sort of about it. I don't think.
Well, what does it kill? Like, what X2s are you worried about? Besides Goblin Guide.
Doesn't
I can't
matter.
Think.
It's 2+1.
Yeah, but Forked Bolt's one.
Or
one
plus two
equals
to your head.
3.
Or 1+2 to your head. Like,
yeah, I guess.
No, it's because you can nug walkers with it too, which is why Arc
Trail
is far superior.
Yeah, that's true.
Like, you can just, like, nice Cobra. Okay, well, blast it, hit you for 2. It's good.
Yeah, that's true. Okay, fine.
But, yeah. Okay, so I guess be on the lookout for both the Primeval Titan decks, right? So Eldrazi, Green of Alakid.
Yeah, two you always got to be ready for that. Basically, just like, even though aggro beats Kabla, just don't run aggro, because you will run into Volokut, and then you will lose.
I don't think there's going to be a heavy presence of Eldrazi Green. You should probably be ready to expect it and just understand what the deck's trying to do, which is ramp and then spit out huge fucking dudes that annihilate you. There's probably going to be three guys that decided, oh, let's beat the metagame. We don't have Jaces, but we don't. we can beat Cobblade, and they'll play a mono green Eldrazi. So just look out for those guys. They'll likely have neck beards and have not showered.
All this talking makes me want to play Valakut instead.
Valakut's really good.
Like, it beats every deck that's not Cobblade, and I mean,
Cobblade sometimes.
Right, and I could probably steal a game.
The other thing, KYT, is all you have to do is top 8, right, to get invited at the big one. So it might be better to play Valakut
It's still hard.
I'm just saying it might be better to play that deck at a big one and top 8 than to play Cobblade, and then you can play Cobblade at the small ones that you have to win or whatever, right?
The message loud and clear here, whatever it is that you decide to play, should be play what you're comfortable playing.
Unless you're a good player, then play the best deck.
The edges that you're going to glean from like matchup to matchup, truthfully, do not compensate for sloppy play skill. No matter what deck you're running.
Exactly.
A fucking poor-ass mono-red deck player is still not going to beat Cobblade, no matter how fucking good the matchup is. Right?
Yeah, so, like when I was at FNM and I went 0-2 with Nina's Valakut list, I was like, well, I guess I just go into the 0-2 bracket and finish 2-0. Like, I'm not losing to whoever's in that bracket.
Right. So I think that just make sure you guys play what you're comfortable with, and I think you can kind of use this guidance to kind of understand your matchups and what the others are trying to do around you. So, but play what you're used to. KYT, if you're not playing Cobblade with Motopod, I'm going to be really upset with you.
I don't know. I'm Valakut just crushes, like, you know, more so than Cobblade, all the bad decks. And I just remember, I have all these memories of facing all these random decks at regionals.
That's like, always the worst. That's always the worst.
Round one, life gain, like super life gain with Martyr of the Sands, if you guys have played with that card. Like, it's, and then I'm like, what? Or just losing to a rogue. I almost lost in this Jace, the winner got 4 Jaces to a mono black infect deck. I'm like, what? And I think if I played Valakut, I'd just like crush it or steamroll it. So.
Well, if you've got the cycles in Valakut, it's not a bad choice. I mean, honestly, Cobblade, Valakut, or our next deck will definitely be amazing choices.
I think you've played it more than any of us. I haven't touched it since Michael Jacob first introduced it to the world. So,
Valakut?
No, the wonderful world of Rug.
Oh, yeah.
Red, blue, green control ramp deck, tempo deck, whatever the hell you want to call it. It's definitely a tempo deck. It has a lot of control elements. It's got instant speed removal, and the idea behind the deck is it tries to maximize and abuse the mana ramping capacities of Lotus Cobra, as well as the library manipulation of Preordain, Explorers, and Jace the Mind Sculptor and Oracle of Moldiah. So what you've got is an unrelenting engine that once started is very difficult to stop. And of course it ramps into end games of Titans of either mostly the Inferno Titan being played right now, and it's also got Avengers Endicar and Precursor Golems.
The better name for the deck is Turbo Titans. I think that's better.
Right. So, as KYT said, Michael Jacob kind of came up with the deck back in Zendikar Block, and it's obviously been kind of tuned and adjusted. Alex Bertoncini, you go and check any of his matches on either from the last Grand Prix or on any of the SCG Lives. He's been living the Rug life, as he says, since the deck came out, and he hasn't stopped. So he's really kind of helped to bring it to where it is today. And I've been playing the shit out of it, and definitely not a beginner deck. It requires a lot of play, a lot of familiarity with the deck itself to be able to recognize what good cards are. There's a lot of complex decision trees that need to be made, but it's extremely powerful. I mean, turn three Inferno Titan is a semi-regular occurrence without interaction from a blue deck. Like, it's fucking insane. So look out for that. Obviously, finishers, we mentioned. It does have mana leaks as well, so it will counter. It does have lightning bolts, so it will be able to dome walkers or remove guys. Raging Ravine.
Does it play Spell Pierce?
No. Raging Ravine is a real threat. And out of the sideboard, you're looking at things like you're looking at Pyroclasms, you're looking at Flash Freezes, Obstinate Baloths, and then about five cards which are kind of up to the individual's decision. Some people are playing extra removal, extra counterspell. Some people are playing Acidic Slimes. Tumble Magnets seem to be played more regularly. Some people are playing Nature's Claim. And there's all sorts of craziness out there. So be ready for it. You need to make sure that you kill the Cobra. Like, when you see a Lotus Cobra in a rug deck, kill it on sight, or chances are you're going to lose.
Yep. I agree with that.
So, like, game one, it's just trying to do its thing, and it's just trying to provide just enough disruption to stop you from being able to stop them. Games two and three, they often will really kind of take their removal and counter suite and, you know, create a surgical tool, which they will use to single-handedly disrupt you until you are out of gas, and then they'll just stick a Titan and win. So that's sort of their plan. And they, of course, they do play four Jace the Mind Sculptors, so look out, because that's an unyielding amount of card advantage, too.
Yeah, so. I find the fastest way to beat Rug is to just be fast. If you're slow, then they'll beat you. If you go fast enough, you can kill them. Like, oftentimes, if you can disrupt them or aggro them out, they don't have an early game.
Yeah, if you can kill the Cobra, like, if they go turn two Cobra and you kill it, and then aggro them out, like, yeah, absolutely. Turn 5, 6, no problem.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's, I guess that covers Rug, right? Like, my spicy list, I promised everyone on Twitter I would give my spicy list for Rug out there for this podcast. So so I'm running one Avengers Endicar, three Inferno Titan, one Frost Titan, and two Precursor Golems main. I'm also running two Oracle Maldaya, four Lotus Cobra, and then four of the rest of it. Mana Leak, Explore, Lightning Bolt, Jace the Mind Sculptor. The mana base is exactly the same as all of the other rug lists that are out there. LSVs and all that shit. So Frost Titan is amazing as a one of in the main deck. It gives you an out to another Resolve Titan. It also gives you an answer to Tumble Magnet if you need to just, like, stick it and then get your guys through. And it also is a really good answer to an Eldrazi. Suck it. it also helps a little bit in the Valakut matchup. You don't quite lose as many percentage points in that one because, you know, you still have the out to just tap their Prime Titan and kind of shut that down as well. You can also fuck with the mana if you drop it third turn. Pretty sick. In my sideboard, I took the Adam Yurchik tech, and I'm running one Jace Bellerin in the sideboard, which is saucy as shit against all of the other Jace decks, and dirty as hell in the mirror. I'm playing three Flash Freeze to help supplement the counters. Generally, I go to... if I see Cobras, I'll leave the Bolts in, but otherwise I'll take them out, and I will play, like, four Leak and three Flash Freeze. The thing about Rug is you just see, like... Oh, after I finish the sideboard, I'll get there. I've got three Pyroclasms, I've got two Obstinate Baloths, I've got two Tumble Magnets, I've got, shout out to Marshall, two Nature's Claim in the sideboard.
Yeah.
Which actually has been a lot better than I expected it to, because, and as Marshall pointed out, like, number one, it's just a quick one mana spike. So, like, you can just stick it in there, and it's easier to resolve against Cobblade, which is always relevant. But what's really, really awesome is you'll bring it in against Cobblade, and you'll be playing Precursor Golem, right? Because that's where that card really shines. And they go to, like, oust it or something, and that's fine. But if they, you know, you attack and they, you know, or they you know, just kill it somehow, you just nature's claim your own guys, and you gain 12. Like, Marshall's actually left it against Boros a lot. And so what happens is there's, because you want nature's claim against their swords, and that's fine, you know, and granted, Precursor Golem eats an arc trail like nobody's business, but it also blocks for days if they don't draw it. So conversely, you can also just leave them in, bait them to bolt it, and then nature's claim your own Precursor Golem to gain 12 life, which is pretty sweet. Anyways, and then the other card I've got in there is I run another Frost Titan, because bringing a second one in against Valakut is always good. And two Tumble Magnets, if I didn't mention them. And the last card, thank you, D-Sale, Volition Reigns. Yes, I have the one Miser in there, because, oh, what's that? Nice Gideon. Nice sword. Nice, you know, whatever. So just, you know, as the one, six is a very real, regular occurrence in Rug deck, so it's fine. And it's really okay to mize cards in Rug, and the reason why you see a lot of one-offs sort of throughout the deck and throughout the sideboard is you see so many cards of your deck. Like, between the Preordains and the Oracles and Jace and the eight fetch lands and all of that crap, like, you see a ton of your deck every game, which is really awesome. So it's okay to kind of put ones and twos in where normally you'd want twos or threes. And, yeah, I find it's, for me, it's been really, really strong. Makes me happy. So that's my Rug list.
Word up.
So why is Rug played over Bug?
So the bug lists are the mana is radically different. Not that saying it's a much worse, it's just very different. So you have to commit yourself to understanding that, because a lot of the bug decks and the Rug decks, I mean, there's no question, they're driven by the blue, right? So you need to make sure that you're getting your blue mana at all times so that you can maintain the control in the game with the mana leaks and preordains and all that stuff. And so in Rug, you can fetch blue from any of your fetch lands, whereas right. you can only fetch blue from four of your fetch lands, and you're getting blue sources from your creeping tar pits. So, whereas it becomes a little bit different in terms of your mana sequencing and where your blue sources are being committed to, because you now need blue to activate your man land. Although it is cheaper, you still, you know, it's like activating a man land and mana leaking becomes a different ordeal.
Mm.
Yeah. So that does play, especially as you get towards the late game. But, I mean, Inferno Titan arguably... You know, Inferno Titan versus Grave Titan is a discussion you can have all day, and it totally is dependent on your meta.
I was just mainly thinking of spot removal.
Yeah.
Like Doomblades and Go for the Throats and Consume the Meats and
right. There's no question that those are outstanding. The only concern... So the discussion is, do I play Inquisition, right? Like, the discard is really good. We all know how good it is against aggro and such. And the spot removal, being able to Go for the Throat Gideon is really good. You know, you've got the options of going, you know, disfigures and stuff in the board. But you can't use Lightning Bolt to kill walkers. So the bug deck does a worse job of beating Jace, even though you have Tar Pit. Because they just, oftentimes the other Jace decks that you're playing against have either Bolt, because you're playing against Rug, or you're playing against Cobblade, and they've got Tectonic Edge.
Well, but you also have access, though, to Duresses and... I don't know. There's like similar answers that play out differently.
Yeah. They're two very different decks. And in my opinion, like, I think that the Rug deck feels faster just based on what it's got going for it. But I think the Bug deck potentially has a bit more reach and a lot more aggro resilience. Definitely better against aggro. So you look out for that too. Because they'll both
be there. No, that's definitely true.
So, generally what you'll find, though, the difference between Rug and Bug is Rug will almost always have the counterspell, and Bug will not. Like, Bug generally plays 2 to 3 mana leaks. If they're playing 4, maybe main deck, but oftentimes that space is reserved for the discard package. So that's just something to consider as you're trying to resolve spells. So, yeah, that's good. That's the top tier decks. Let's get into Boros. Jay, tell us about Boros.
Boros. Borosing all
them
Boros.
Red white decks.
Okay, what are we trying to? What are we? You
them
like
cowboy and Indian decks?
Yeah, so. So
we talked about it a lot.
Yeah. So what are the major strengths of Boros? Like,
it's fast. It can. What else? I mean, I play 15 fetches. I think most people should be playing 15 fetches. So your lands effectively just become 4 damage spells. It's like the thing that's good about Boros is that like if you get land flooded and you have guys, then like at least you can do something. It has a lot of the strength of Cobblade in the swords and in the Stoneforge package. It can, like KYT said, it can splash Gideon. I've been splashing Gideon. I've tried splashing Emyria Angel as well, and going Mortar Pod route, or even just Emyria Angel just to block Hawks all day. It's got really good spot removal tech. I mean, where it can falter is that like if you don't have a balanced draw throughout your game, it's really easy to get outclassed. And if you just sit there getting mana flooded, then and you have no guys or they kill your one or two guys, you can totally just lose the game because you're playing 26 land. Also, it's really easy to misplay that deck. Like, Boros isn't a deck that auto-plays. So it's really easy to misplay that. It's really difficult sometimes when you have 4 mana to know whether or not you should do X or if you should play a Stoneforge and equip a sword, or if you should play a Hero of Oxid Ridge, or like depending on what their mana has open. And then it really struggles really difficult with... Cobblade once they get a Feast and Famine on there, because they can just untap and then they just, in your mind, they have infinite counters. Like, they're just holding infinite counters and you're just like, okay, well. And if it's game 2 and 3, like, it's even worse because they have flash freezes. So oftentimes in game 2 and 3, what I do is most of my sideboard guide against Cobblade will show that, like, I take out almost all red cards. And it just so happened that those cards are worse anyway, but I'm taking out mostly all red cards and putting in mostly all white cards. And then, like, as an extra bonus, I just happen to notice that that's really good against flash freeze as well. So
it sounds like Boros is another exercise in power versus consistency. Would you agree with that? Like, it seems like Boros is doing exceptionally powerful things. I mean, we've all felt the sting of the turn 3 loss. You know what I mean? Like, Boros just gets there. Is it a consistency exchange on occasion?
It can be. Like, you really have to, like, shuffle your deck. And you really have to, like, make sure that you don't tilt. And yeah, like, I mean, a lot of times too, you got to know what you're doing with your fetch lands. You got to know how to sandbag fetches. You got to be able to get the right equipment to your, like, through your Stoneforges. Like, a lot of people, what will happen is they'll see me go turn 2 Stoneforge or turn 3 Stoneforge and get adventuring gear. And they'll kind of look at you funny. Like, they expect a sword and they let that adventuring gear sit and they won't remove it. And I mean, I've, like, the number of times that I've killed people with adventuring gear. Like a hand with Steplinks adventuring gear and 5 land are just like that happens quite often where I'm just like, I'll just like, I just have to kill you. And I know you're playing something that can't deal with my deck and you're just going so slow. So that's a game 2. I'll keep it fine. And I just kill you. Like, I can get there and, you know, I'm ripping other things during that time, but it's something that if you don't make sure that you're shuffling really well after every game, you can and will get land flooded. And I've gotten, you know, I've sat there and drawn, you know, 14 lands, 13 lands, 7 lands, 17 lands, you know, 5 lands. And you're sitting there keeping a hand with, you know, 2 or 3 guys and maybe 3 lands and an equipment or something like that, or a removal spell. And then, you know, they kill your 1 or 2 guys and you basically keep ripping lands. And now you just have lands. And Boros, that's really bad. Yeah. So the other thing is that you really only have 10 mana producing lands, maybe 11. Yeah, 11. So it's really difficult to play any big spells. Like, your 4 drops even can become really mana intensive. You just sit there with, you know, 2 plains and a mountain and kind of dirtle around thinking you're going to rip your 4th land drop and then you don't, right? So that can be a problem.
Nice. Okay. Sideboard tech, obviously. You're looking at Gideon. Anything else? What are the bad matchups that you're looking to shore up with your board?
Well, I mean, like, the mirror is always good. So, like, core Firewalkers can be good. Like, Arc Trails for sure are the nut. Divine Offerings. I mean, it's pretty standard stuff. Like I said, sometimes I play Amiria Angel. Just if I feel that you're playing, you know, a game where you can't deal with that, or you can't deal with swarms of birds. I mean, they're really good for chump blocking, and they're really good for just equipping their own sword, right? Mm-hmm. And then the only other thing that, like, sometimes I'll do is, like, I also play sometimes, like, three swords instead of one or two. Just because people are going to pack hate for them. So it's really good when you go sword, they kill it, and then you just go sword again, and they're like, ah, shit. And then if they manage to kill that, you just, like, sword again, and then they die, like... You know, I mean, Bone Horde, if you're not on the Bone Horde bandwagon, then you're not doing it right. I don't think that Mirror and Crusader should be in the deck. I think it just dies to too much stuff, too much spot removal. Kemba, I'm still Miser's copying Kemba. And, I mean, she hasn't really ever done anything for me, because she's just a lightning rod. People just kill her. But, I mean, she can be really good, especially in the mirror and especially against aggro, because she's got that big fat ass. I mean, people have suggested Mortar Pod. I think Mortar Pod's a bad choice in that deck because you don't want to be you can't be killing your own guys. You can definitely and should be definitely playing the Spark Mage combo. That's another reason I don't like what's that Spike Shot Elder? I don't like Spike Shot Elder because he's really mana intensive. Sometimes you can live the dream and get a sword on him, and you know, like you can live the dream and, like, bolt people with swords or bolt creatures for three mana. But most of the time, like, he's just mana intensive. You have so much mana that, like, he's not really actually doing anything. What else? That's pretty much it. I mean, Boros is a pretty straight up deck. I mean, I think that's probably the reason why Paul's not doing very good with it. Paul Rietzel. Like, he's kind of gone away from it and has, you know, said he's looking for a different deck, mainly just because, like, he's starting to, it's not performing as well because it's almost like it dies to the same things that, it's good against, and it dies to all the same stuff that people are bringing against Cobblade.
Like Inferno Titan.
Yeah, and stuff like that. Like, it just dies to all that stuff. Like, if you can't kill someone really quickly, then a lot of times you're just boned. And like I said, when that Ben guy went, you know, or when KYT goes two Planeswalkers, or when that Ben guy went Titan, untap Titan, like, Boros can't actually do anything against that.
Yeah.
You don't have an answer. So, I don't know. I still like it as a deck. I still, you know, can consistently 3-1 with it, but... I mean,
maybe,
it's not evolving.
The best pick for Nationals.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to kill a lot of stuff, but you're gonna lose. Probably you're gonna lose to, like, it's almost a coin flip to Cobblade, and you're gonna lose to the Valakut lists that are playing eight Titans. You don't have a way to interact with them. So if they hit a summoning trap and they get a Titan, like, you know, that's real. So
nice. Yeah. Okay. So, do we want to talk about one of Jesse's decks and give him some time in the sun?
Well, I mean, obviously it's not going to be a part of the metagame, so, I mean...
Well, no, I was going to give you one to talk about.
Oh, okay. Let's hear it.
So, you want to talk about some of the green-white Vengevine action that's out there right now?
Yeah, definitely. I mean... It's like a fairly real deck, but like if you know your local area is Volokut heavy, it's just like not the choice. But if it's Cobblade heavy, I mean, it's definitely a completely viable choice. It's just faster. It beats them down. I mean, we know Cobblade loses to aggro. Vengevine just keeps coming at them. All they really have is Tumble Magnets and the occasional Condemns, mostly sideboard. I mean, KYT spoke to it a little bit earlier, so I won't go on it too much. But, I mean, green-white is a completely viable deck if you are... if you just know your meta well, basically, is what it comes down to. And if it just consists of Cobblade, really. Because green white's not great against Boros, and it's a dog completely to Volokut, and actually it's okay versus Rug, but you better have some removal for the Lotus Cobras, because the turn four Inferno Titans just game over.
So you're ideally you're looking to play this with Stone. Like, I've seen a bunch of lists, and they kind of go either Stoneforge Mystic route or Lead the Stampede route or both.
Yeah.
So what are we advocating here?
Like, well, I mean, the only reason you're playing it is it to be Cobblade, and in that case, you'll want to run both, definitely. I mean, if you're trying to be Volokut, you're going the wrong way anyways, so just go all out, and you want to be able to grind out mid and long games, so definitely both.
Okay. And you are playing equipment package, looks like what? Feast and Famine, Body and Mind, and what?
Yeah, I'd probably play both. I don't know. Mortarpod! Yep. No, probably just shit bone horde. I mean, if you're going to play a third equipment.
Shit bone horde.
Honestly, I'd only play two equipments if you're playing Lead the Stampede. Because I guarantee you're at 28 or 29 then, and you need to be 29, 30 to 34. So, I mean, ideally. So, definitely, I'd just stick to two, and I'd probably go like Bone Horde, Feast and Famine, maybe Body and Mind, just because it's an aggro deck and it plays out differently than Feast and Famine.
Yeah. I would think that you definitely want at least Body and Mind in your 75, because it gives you such a really big edge against Valakut.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's one of your main win cons against Valakut for sure. And also a Silence in the sideboard four of.
So Jesse's actually been on this Silence kick against Valakut, because really you just need to stop them turns four and five and you win.
Right.
So you just get there. So, I mean, we saw it in Naya, and he was playing it in Naya way back in the day. And you know what? I've done some testing with it, and it isn't terrible.
It works.
It's pretty bad.
It's it works.
It's like the name Tezzeret the Mind Hammer.
It's not as bad as a turn one Preordain.
There we go. It actually, like, when it works, it's a time warp for one, right? I mean, Volokut, I guess, can like harrow if they've got like the Kahalni hard expeditions in play and kind of beat you that way instant speed, but I mean, against a deck without board presence, it's a time warp for one mana in white. It's a really good card.
Okay. Anyways, I think the major weaknesses to the deck is a lack of capacity to interact.
Yeah.
So it's completely an ignore you deck, and it's just going to beat your face down with creatures and get there.
Mostly. I really like the Hookmaster tech.
And so look out for that if you're playing against the green-white Vengevine list, and they don't show you. So the other green-white list that's out there is Quest, right? So if you don't see Ornithopter, Memnite, Quest, or Core Skyfisher from a green-white list, then it's not Quest. If you see any of those cards, it is Quest.
Yep.
So, is good. And Quest is terrible. It's really bad, and they try to recycle, because they're bouncing guys all the time. They're playing Vengevine as well, and it's diverging the strategy, and it's fucking terrible, in my opinion. But anyways.
I also hate that deck.
You also hate that deck.
Yeah. And that being said, though, like, I thought I'd never played it with Boros. I'd never played against it. And I thought I was so boned. And I think 15, maybe 12 cards came in from my sideboard for it. Turned out really well. And I just hosed him. I mean, he did get the quest. And, I mean, Arc Trail was definitely a big host. And Lightning Bolt was a big, big deal. So
Lightning Bolt, so good. So black red vampires, like, is this still a deck? People still playing
on Moto? It is.
Yeah.
The other thing is it's cheap, and I've heard that at these regionals and these Nats and stuff, cheap. You know, I mean, the first three or four rounds, there's going to be cheap decks.
Yes, sir. You'll be looking at red deck wins through that later. But black red vampires is always it's pretty prevalent here in Toronto as well. A lot of people are playing it. You know, so major cards. Bitches. There you're looking at for it. Yeah, bitches be crazy. You're looking for Kalasia Highborns. She's like the absolute uber lord and uber bitch that you need to deal with.
Yeah.
If you can counter her, do so. Don't fall in the trap of... you got to watch your life points. Like, you really need to stay like at 14 before you have to start chump blocking. Because if they just like bolt you or if they get you... You need to stay... Yeah, you need to stay at 14. Because if you hit 13, they're going to bolt you and then everything they have... like turns off the bad stuff for them and gets haste.
Yeah, right. The other thing is like it seems like to be the aggro list. I've never seen a deck as fast as Black Red Vamps in the current standard. It's like crazy. And if they god draw you or even good draw you, like it's really difficult to come back from because of Kalastria Highborn.
Yeah, and the other yeah, and you know what they play a lot of like it's really tough for Cobra decks to beat. Red Black Vampires, like it's one of the worst matchups, because you just can't play Cobra, like you just can't ever get it there.
Yeah,
because you go Cobra and they go great Arc Trail, take two, and I'm like fuck.
Yeah, and then like anything else you play, they just Malakir it and Doomblade it and go for the throat it and disfigure it and kill it and attack. The other thing is like if they have a Highborn, they just attack into you. And then
2 point drain each time.
Yeah, and then they just like it doesn't matter. Like that's the other thing is like it's just really difficult to beat them.
It's basically just like an evasion deck. It's got good evasion because of that.
Yeah, I haven't seen any of them play. What's it called? What's that card called? You know that one. It does things.
Oh yeah, Eldrazi that one.
Eldrazi Monument. I haven't seen them play that. I think
no. They don't. I don't think they need it.
They don't have anything over three. I think. And I mean, it would be interesting. As you know, it'd be an interesting card to see because, yeah. But like Scott said, I don't think it's like relevant. It's
the problem. They want their people to die so they can get Highborn triggers anyway. So yeah. It doesn't really matter. It's not being played for that reason, I think. But
make no mistake, this is not the Vamps deck when M10 was around. So I've seen a lot of people make that mistake.
Yeah, this is not your daddy's vampires.
That's right.
Yeah.
Is your slutty, diseased girlfriend's vampire.
If you're sleeping on this list, it will fucking kill you. Yeah. Like it's so bad. You need to be ready for it large. I mean, now, Obstinate Baeloth, if you're in a green deck, is a pretty good answer for that, as long as you've got something else. Because like, you can't rely on single creature strategies, because they're running Gatekeeper too. The Gatekeeper Malakir is a blowout. So, if you can land big dudes in multiples, you probably will be okay. Look for Memoricide and discard as well out of the sideboard, because that's pretty bad. And Malakir Blood Witch, by the way, is really good against Cobblade. Just saying. Just saying. KYT, talk to us about your blue-black control a little bit, if you don't mind.
I don't know, blue-black control just... apparently, from what we heard from the GP, this was the most interesting thing, that the Wafatapa was... drawing first in some of his games, like going second. I think that's really interesting. Did you guys hear
what was the reasoning for that? No,
just for like the extra card. And
Well, if he's in the Cobblade match, drawing first is probably okay because he's gonna play his first turn land and you're gonna take the opportunity to land Stoneforge Mystic and he's just gonna pluck the sword.
Right.
So in that matchup, it's probably correct to go second.
I don't know if that's the right game plan, because I just untap, tap, play Jace Bellerin or something. So, shrugs. But I still feel like a lot of people say like LSV, PV. Well, maybe not PV, but LSV and Chapin don't understand why it won GP Barcelona. Don't know why it was able to crush so many Cobblade decks. Still think Cobblade is the superior deck. And I would have to agree. It still feels like one of those many solution decks, and you never have the right answer sometimes, where you're holding to Black Sun Zenith, and they have a bunch of Planeswalkers, or... you know, you have counterspells and
yeah, that's the worst
beat down. But definitely something to look out for, because it seemed to have seen some play at GP Ellis based on the GP Barcelona results, but I'm not really preparing for it at all.
No, it's going to be one of those decks that you're going to see, and you might face it in the first couple of rounds. If you're facing, here's the thing, if you're facing blue-black control and it's towards the end of the tournament and you're like in contention, you're probably up against a sick mad pilot and you really should watch yourself, because like this is one of those decks that like Waffle Tapa, right, is classic example. Like the man is control, like he's the master. So, you know, he put that into his hand, you put a control deck like that, and he's gonna own you every day of the week. Every day. So if you're facing against a blue-black control late in the tournament, you probably want to keep your eyes peeled and get ready.
I'm just really curious. I wish you would write an article about like what matchups he'd draw first, and like what the matchups are, because it's like letting turn two Stoneforge resolve is usually pretty hard to come back from unless you have the discard spell, and then. Again, I can untap and do something like play a Jace. So very interested in that. But Conley just posted up a new, what he might have played, which was what he was working on. It's pretty funky, like his favorite card, Abyssal Persecutor. And I've seen that played in, starting to see play, but it never really gets up there in the top eight, right? So I guess
it's funny. It's funny you mention it. My buddy who I pull cards with is 3-0 in a daily right now with our bug list, and it's running 3 Abyssal.
It just seems to come and go. Like at a recent Star City Games event, it almost made top 8 in a Jun deck, and it just never seems to be the tier 1 card yet. Just interesting. But yeah, nothing really too much about blue-black. I don't worry about it as much as I used to previous to this set. Like, it was the control deck, right? Before Besieged, if I remember.
Yeah, it was pre-Sword.
Right. So now, like, you could play Sword, I guess, but it's obviously not as effective as Stoneforge Mystic.
Yeah. Yep.
So what else, what other decks are there?
Grixis Walkers. Jesse.
Grixis Walkers is like a fringe deck that actually is gaining a lot of ground. I mean, partly because of me, because I'm the fucking shit. No, but it really is. I mean, ever since Worlds, when Chapin was running it, it's been around. And it is a real deck. I mean, Tezzeret's a powerful card. Burn stops a lot of strategies, hitting those Lotus Cobras against Rug. So it's a deck you have to watch out for. It's really just kind of a mid-range deck, and you don't really need to prep for it, but you got to be aware of it, and possibly just know the matchup, even if you just test a few games against it, and kind of what disrupts it. Like my Koth list, the Koth Tezzeret list, is very, very loose as far as the mana goes. If you disrupt it, it'll do what it wants to do, but if you disrupt it, it's very hard for it to come back from behind. And I think that's true for any of the Grixis lists that I've seen, at least. Like, they don't run ultra-powerful cards except mine. Mine's kind of just like haymaker after haymaker, but if you're just trying to catch back up, they just keep answering it on the return play, so... just be aware of decks like that, and that's kind of my only recommendation. Just look at deck lists from wherever your source is. Probably mtgonline.com is where you're going to get most deck lists for TCG player.
Yep. Agreed. So, did we go over sort of what the game plan is, what the strategies are here? Like, did you talk about that at all?
As far as like the Grixis list,
yeah,
like if you're manning it, I mean, the game plan is really, it's kind of just an aggro, or not an aggro deck, but you kind of want to be the aggressor, and I mean, the idea is like turn three Walker, swing for 4 or 5 ideally. If you're kind of on the draw, I mean, you want to get ahead of them as far as mana ramp goes, and then maybe drop your Walker when you see an opening, like counter spells, when you're on the draw, the main problem with the deck is like if your walkers get countered, so you got to find opportunities to like kill, like hit their mana, or like Inquisition their hand out, get the leak out, and stick a Tezzeret. But like if you're on the play and you're being the aggressor and you're just minus one-ing Tezzeret and attacking with Koth, et cetera, like you just like balls to the wall and they can't really catch up because they have so many things they have to answer because they have to answer like the creature and the walker and it's just too much. So your idea is just get ahead and however you can do that, do that. Like kill their creature that's going to kill your walker if you stick it next turn, if that makes sense. Win the die roll.
Yeah.
It's pretty important.
Yeah. I think it's safe to say, like, the one thing that's really nice about this deck is it does actually ramp pretty quickly with all the artifact mana, mm-hmm. which is always good because, you know, it does end up very mana intensive just because all of your best spells, you know, are fours and sixes. Mm-hmm. But the thing to remember is that this is not a control deck. In this current shape, it is not a control deck. No. It is actually like a mid-range
deck. It's a mid-range, yep, absolutely. But
what it does is it goes big very fast. Like it breaks into the upper mid-range area very fast, like with 5/5s and such, that normal removal for those mid-range decks won't do. Like Bolt just sucks unless they're bolting your walkers, and that's what they have to do with it, right? Mm-hmm. So understand that you're not putting out a walker to protect it, except maybe Jace. But often, what you know, my testing with the deck, I was often just playing Jace to bounce a blocker to get in for more.
Yeah, exactly. Like that. Yeah, you got to play it differently than you'd expect. Like because there's blue, and you think of Tezzeret as a control guy. You just got to play it more aggressively for sure.
Yeah, and then I think that changes the way that a lot of people I think will view the deck, which will likely help out with play lines a lot.
Yeah, absolutely. And you can't go in blind. You have to play this deck a lot of games to understand it and understand the importance of like each play, because each play is extremely important. You can't whiff. You can't mess up.
Yeah, and I think the sequencing of your walkers and which ones you're prepared to walk into counter spells or not, like it's okay often for Cobblade to kind of like tap out for Jace, you know, if they know you're not running counters, or you tap out to ramp up some mana or whatever. You know, they tap out for Jace and you untap and play Koth and kill Jace, or you untap, play Tezzeret, animate an artifact and kill Jace. Like all of these things are okay. So definitely the Jace is the lower priority in terms of the planeswalkers in that deck.
Yep.
Which will make all of the haters happy.
Well, and, who was it? He was 5-0 in the PTQ and needed one more win to make top 8. It was Watchwolf 92 that's his moto name rather. And he was in the PTQ. He opted for a Jaceless version, and he's been running it through the dailies, 3-1-ing all over the place. And every list has been different. So he's playing with it in the PTQ. He was 5-0 and just almost there. He ended up dropping 3, but that was a Jaceless version of it. And it might be correct because of the way the deck plays out. The problem is you got to run good because you will have games where you won't hit your gas like you want to.
Right. Well, if you're not playing Jace and you can fit in, you know, Inquisition and Preordain, then that's mm-hmm. probably not bad though.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the deck has a lot of ways, and it's a mid-range deck, kind of like Jund in a way, just as powerful things and can adapt to metagames. In those colors, you're going to have answers to everything depending on meta shifts.
Yeah, agreed. Okay, good. Major sideboard tech? Major weakness, Gideon?
Major weakness, not necessarily Gideon. The major weakness is artifact removal and hitting your ramp spells, slowing you down is what it comes down to. Messing up your mana or your ramp spells is his major weakness.
Okay. So major sideboard tech you're running, obviously you've got crushes, you're looking at, you know, some sort of board sweeper, be it Slagstorm or Pyroclasm in some main or sideboard or whatever.
Yeah, mostly.
still on the Memora side plan?
Against Volokut, yes. Against Cobblade, I stopped bringing it in. Gideon is kind of a problem, but I'm not too worried about it. I kind of just bust out Inquisitions against him. It's pretty standard sideboard, just like effective, low-costed stuff to control the board early so you can like just keep laying your haymakers each turn, like turns 4, 5, 6.
Nice.
If it even goes that long.
Yeah, it's funny, you know, because like there's been lines of play with that deck where I feel like, you know, my opponent looks like, you know, Anderson Silva's last opponent. Like, it's really bad. Like, you just kind of, there's lines of plays with this deck that are just so powerful that you outclass everything your opponent does step by step by step. But it can be very vulnerable to Boros, as I found with Jay.
Yeah.
Because
I smoked you.
Yeah. They don't give you the time to set up.
Like, the thing is, yeah,
and you're way worse in game 2 and 3. Like, if you even get a game 3, you're lucky.
Well, the thing is, like,
your board hate, like my board hate for your deck is actually really good.
Yeah. The thing is that you can like prepare if like you're worried about Boros as a metagame deck, you can totally hate him out way more than like my sideboard is handling right now.
Oh yeah, like you can play Phyrexian Crusader if you want.
Right.
And that's badass. There's nothing wrong with that. I've seen builds, and there's other ways, like there's other builds that aren't running Koth necessarily, that are more focused on poison and proliferate. So they're running Phyrexian Crusader and Ink Moth Nexus, and they've got Contagion Clasps to help fuel chalices as well as provide inevitability for death. So look out for those both types. Ink Moth Nexus, quite honestly, is a scary ass card. Like, if you see it, you're probably going to die to it unless you can kill it. It's really, really bad. So, anyways, I guess KYT, do you want to talk about the big red menace?
Mono
red? Is that
red?
Even real?
Yeah, not big red, just mono red. Like Patrick Sullivan mono red with fucking Searing Blaze, baby.
Well, Bensi really wanted me to answer this question. He's been asking me, tweeting me a lot about this, and obviously want your thoughts on this. Is what's the best answer for Core Firewalker? And he's been like, he's tried the Peerless Mirror, Arc Trail, or Stagger Shock, your own
Necropede.
There's Necropede. There's some people I've seen just play Tumble Magnet.
We see a lot.
Ignore to completely just ignore the Core Firewalker. I've seen people play Master Core as well. I don't know if you've seen that, Jay.
Yeah, I have. Yeah.
So.
That one seems like the most consistent.
Yeah, so there's a.
It also just seems good, isn't it? That just good, like.
Right.
I don't. How many guys are in mono red though? I mean, there's what, Goblin Guides, Ember Haulers, Plated Geopede, maybe. And what else? Karga Dragon Lords still.
Yeah, maybe Dragon Lords.
I think for me, it's just like you just lose. I wouldn't worry about figuring out an answer. That's my take. That's what I told him. I mean, then you make, because what if most blue-white decks don't even have Core Firewalkers, so you're just attacking with Peerless Mirrors and such? I don't know.
Is there a red spell that gives trample?
Nope.
There's red spells that give double strike.
Well, listen, you've still got unstable footing if you need to, right? Like, you can play unstable footing in your sideboard if you're worried about Core Firewalker, because it says damage can't be prevented this turn for one red mana. So you swing in with all your guys, they block the Firewalkers, you cast on stable footing, and you kill the Firewalkers. So that's really the only viable option that's not totally changing the without totally changing the fucking
right.
Like the deck, approach, yeah,
right?
Yeah.
The deck, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, if you want to go the artifact route or whatever, you can. Like, if you want to support Master Core, is all I'm saying. I'm just not sure that it's okay to support it with the creature base that you've got in there. I just don't feel like it's enough. Every time I play Master Core, I want like 28 dudes in the deck. You know.
I think people are just playing it in.
You want to see
as something that they can attack.
A fucking ocean of dudes is what I want with Master Core.
A black sea of dudes.
That's better.
The salty black sea of dudes.
Excellent. So the two fast decks, Kuldotha Red and White Weenie Quest, do they actually exist?
No, probably? I would just ignore them. I haven't even seen them in dailies. Like they're just gone. Like don't even worry about it. Like if you just come up against them, just shrug it off as bad luck and say,
and
just
play good, just run good,
or just run good. Yeah.
Well, I mean, the good news is the quest deck can be hated out with the incidental artifact hate that you're packing for Cobblade.
Yep, and the spot and removal as well.
Right, good. The K-Red deck can probably be taken down with the same sort of sideboard stuff that you're looking to bring in against Black-Red Vampires and Boros.
I don't think that the K-Red deck will be around anymore. I think most people have switched to Goblins, which you might want to watch out for. And again, like you said, like you just want to be bringing in board sweepers. Goblins will kill you on turn three. And you just bring it forward.
What was the off, like, there wasn't there like some sort of bonkers optimal line of play with
K Red? You could down two with K Red, yeah.
Like on turn two, right?
Yeah, it was like, I can't remember what it was, but it was like
Isn't it like it's signal pests with Mox Opals?
Yeah, it was like Goblin Guide into 19 damage on turn two, I think. So it was 21 damage total.
Right. That's it. Yeah. That's scary as shit.
Yeah. I've seen it once. But again, like those are god draws, right?
Yeah.
The thing is, like you'll I think K-Red has gone away from that, and people have just changed it into the Goblins deck, which is worse, like, and like better in terms of consistency, worse to play against. Like it's really difficult to play against it. It just plays like those Goblin Chieftains, and then it plays like every Goblin in the set, and then it plays like basically just Dome Burn, and it can like I've with Boros. I mean, not with Boros, with Valakut. I've died to it on turn like three and four consistently lots. So you just want to be bringing in lots of sweepers and spot removal.
Agreed. Yep, it's very important that you kill the Goblin Lord.
Yeah, very absolutely. Important.
And don't take too much damage from Goblin Guide before you realize it's too late.
Yeah.
So, okay.
But
well,
just ignore those decks.
I think that just about covers the metagame and what you should be expecting. If you see anything else other than that, it's probably jank, and you should probably just kill it and not lose. That would be good.
And if you lose to it, don't tilt.
Yeah, because it's variance, right? At that point in time, you're being beat by something that somebody went the rogue route, and that's fine.
Yeah,
it's variance. Obviously it's going to depend on how finely tuned your deck is. And what your what your strengths and weaknesses are innately going to be. So I guess that wraps up the metagame. KYT, I know you wanted to talk about the 2012 stuff. We've kind of been really dry, so
yeah.
If you want to like squeeze in all of the comedic awesomeness in the last half an hour and make people fucking listen to it, that'd be hilarious. Well, so let's just have some fun.
Yeah, let's just have some fun to just wrap up the show, but The main topic is the announcement of there being more GPs next year.
Unless
which is awesome.
Pre-releases, yeah.
Which is awesome. Or less pre-releases. So let's talk about that first. How would that affect us? For me, I usually... I don't know. It depends who's going. I usually flip-flop from the one my local store is doing or the regional pre-release. But I'm sort of friends with the person that actually organizes the pre-release, the regional ones, and I think he just got totally screwed in this because I imagine he makes most of his income for the year on these regional pre-releases. He makes a lot of, from the entry fees, from taking money in for dealers card dealers that want to be there to set up their whatever to sell cards, and it sucks for him. I don't know how it's going to affect you guys.
Well, it means no more casual flight for me.
Yeah, I guess that's right.
But it also means like I won't really probably need one because I'm also only going to be playing against, 10 people now. I'm really kind of bummed that I'm bummed that, basically, like, now I'm just going to be playing against the same 10 people I play against now. Like, it's just going to be same old, same old. Like, the thing that was really fun about pre-releases, regional pre-releases, is that every 3 months I got to see the Edmonton guys and I got to see the Red Deer guys and I got to see the other Calgary people that I never see because they play at a different store than I do, right? And I'm like friends with some of those people, and like I'm like, oh hey, it's you. Like, how you been? How's your wife? How's your kid? They raping everybody. Hide your wives and kids. But like, you know what I mean? Like, I at least could talk to those people. I was like, hey man, remember when this happened? And you know, people come up to me and they're like, hey, like how are you? You know, I haven't seen you since the last pre-release. That's all gone. Now it's gonna be, well, I guess I'll just try to go to 5 pre-releases and. You know, I guess I'll go to this pre-release and play against these 10 guys and then go to that pre-release and play against those 10 guys. And you know what I mean? Like, it just, I think that's like, I don't really understand why they went that route. And I don't agree with it, just mainly because I think size-wise, like, that was a big deal for me. And the other thing is, like, for new players and younger players, like, I one thing for me is for kids, like, for little kids. And younger players, you know, in that 13 to 15 age bracket, regional pre-releases were really fun for them. They had a lot of, like, I never saw a little kid have a bad time. He would go 06, right, or 04 in the casual bracket. He would go 04, and just, like, he'd have a great time, and he'd come over and be like, Dad, I met all these cool people, and I saw a guy over there that's got a foil, you know, admonition angel, and, like, wow, cool, and, like, you know what I mean? Like, they just have fun, and now they're not going to go, right? Or they're going to go and only play against those 10 guys that are like a tightly knit group of friends and probably don't have like tolerance for little kids or for whatever, right?
Right.
Like that's something that's, you know, I mean, if I was a parent, I would definitely want my kids to have as much fun as possible, especially if I'm like Carrie Dan and I'm shelling out $100 to go to a pre-release, you know? So the other thing too that I thought about is, I don't know if this is going to continue, but our regional pre-releases always had like celebrity gunslingers. So we had
BDM, right?
Well, we had BDM, which was like, he's the highest profile that I, in my recent memory that I can think of. And he was really cool actually too. Like, he was a nice guy. Brian Jemba trolled him. I punted a game against him. Sean Peche interviewed him for a project. He was just a really nice guy. And it was actually really cool to meet BDM. Like, he's a big Magic celebrity, right? Like,
right,
he's a big deal. You know, before him we had whichever Stark it is that runs the Starkington Post. What's that guy's
name? Bill Stark?
Is it Bill or is it Ben?
Bill.
It's Bill. So we had Bill Stark. So like that was cool for people. Before that we had fucking Aaron fucking Forsyth, who,
that's wild.
You know, I mean, albeit was kind of a dink. You know, he was kind of being like that rude celebrity, you know, you'd be like, hey, how's it going? And he'd be kind of like, I don't want to be here. I'm just here because I have to be, kind of idea. That was kind of gay, but like,
short end of the straw.
Yeah. And at least like, and that was in Calgary. That wasn't Vancouver. That wasn't Toronto. That wasn't Montreal. That wasn't like a big GP. That was a fucking regional pre-release in Calgary. Like, that's cool. And that's not going to happen anymore. You think he's going to come to a, like, Phoenix Comics for 12 angry guys that don't shower? Like, no, he's going to be like, fuck you guys. I'll phone it in maybe at best. I'll send you a letter with my stamp on it. You know? So that's something I think it's shitty. So. And I mean, in terms of more GPs, does that mean more Canadian GPs?
Or
does
I would just hope mean, so.
Like, because if it doesn't, then it's actually just totally boned me.
So the thing that I fucking can't stand about the multiple GPs is not that they're doing more GPs, but there's two things that are really shitty. Number one, they've closed the pro tours to the public. So now you can't go for Magic Weekend and Railbird the pro tour and then go play in the GP the next day.
Yeah, that's bogus. Although I never did that. So
no, but now you can't. There was a lot of people that had a lot of fun doing that. Now, the other one that drives me crazy is they're no longer going to announce the entire schedule.
What's that mean?
Well,
you mean like a year in advance, you mean?
Yeah, so normally they're like, here's the schedule, and they go, boom, here's the year of events and what's being played at what event and so on and so forth. They're not doing that anymore.
Why?
So because they're not. So now what they're going to do is they're going to announce it maybe a month or two or 2 months out or whatever, and they're just going to say, okay, so this is where we're at, and here's the format. And That's what it's going to be. It's fucking terrible.
That's really bad. How do I plan my fucking 4 trips to go to GP? Like,
right.
Like, how do you plan that now? Like, I was looking at PV's Twitter earlier today, and he was talking about how he misplayed the ticket to Providence, and he had like 12 tabs open in his internet, you know, window, and like couldn't find a ticket still. And then I think it was even KYT was talking to him about something, and he was like, I'm trying to plan all my trips or whatever through travel agents now. I have to. And then he listed like 5 events, and everyone was like, oh, it's cool you're going to all those. And then people were like, are you going to the GP, I don't know, somewhere, Portugal from Brazil, or are you going to go from America? They were talking to him about that stuff. And like, at least you can plan that, right? You can get your bros together. You can plan road trips a year in advance to GP Portland like I did. You know, yeah. Stuff like that. Now you can't do that, is what you're saying?
That's what I'm telling you.
Awesome. Well, I guess I'm...
awesome.
Guess I'm just going to start playing the casual 10-man pre-releases. Yeah. Like, I don't know. It doesn't sound like fun to me. And, like, the only thing that I can think of, and again, I have no insight on this, although I do... I might get some later, which I can tell you guys about later. The only reason I can think that they're doing this is because Star City Games is taking over, right? Like Star City Games opens?
Right.
Are becoming go-to tournaments?
You think that's why they're doing it?
Well, from a marketing standpoint, why would they be like... Why would they let them have that, right? Like, that's a classic big business move where you let everybody else innovate for you.
And then you just
flash your proprietary badge, right?
Yeah.
I mean, and again, like, I mean, I don't want to be negative or just blindly negative, but... Even if they said that wasn't what they were doing, I would like them to present a pretty good answer for why they wouldn't be doing that. Like, because doesn't that make sense to, like, does that make sense to you guys? Like, it makes business sense to me that you're looking at somebody going, wow, for the last, how long has the Star City Games Open been around? Like 6 months? 8 months?
8, probably, I think.
Probably, like, I was going to say a year, but then I didn't think it was that long. So let's say less than a year, but more than half a year. And you're looking at it and you're going, holy shit, like, every single pro, big name pro, is at this thing every single weekend. Every single tournament is selling out. There are hundreds, thousands of people that are always showing up to these things. Star City Games Live has, you know, booted up an amazing... albeit by contrast, but an amazing commentary, and they're getting funding for X and Y and Z, and they're doing all this stuff, and they're taking pros, and they're getting bigger and bigger, like, obviously from all of this revenue. And pros are going. They're not being invited. They're not being propositioned. They're not being bribed to be there. Like, they want to be there. They're volunteering to go to that, and they're showing up every weekend, like... How can you not just be like, nope, we're just going to take that? Like, if it was me, I would.
Yeah.
You know? Like, I would do it. I'd be like, hey, you know, I'd be like, especially, like, if somebody in Hasbro found out, I would just be like, why aren't we doing this? That sounds stupid to me. And, I mean, people have been talking about this for a long time that, you know, Star City Games Opens are going to get big and either WotC is going to take it over or what they're going to do, the other option. And I think we might have discussed this on the cast, was that WotC steps back and does no GPs, does no pre-releases, does no...
And let someone else run.
And they outsource it, right? They just sponsor with product. Obviously, they've decided to go the other route, which is to take them over. So... And I mean, I don't see why not. Like, you know how much money they probably make?
Yeah.
Like, Star City Games probably just makes boat loads of seas of dudes of cash. Like, I can't imagine that they don't.
Yeah.
Otherwise, how could they afford to have one of these every goddamn weekend?
True.
Right? And think about it. Would anybody know who Edgar Flores was, for example? If this wasn't going on? Would Cobblade be as dominant? Maybe not. Because Jerry T, fucking that bastard, just showcases it every weekend. You know what I mean? Like, would the pro circuit look like it does now if, you know, these guys couldn't top 8 every weekend?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's good for the pros. I'm not saying that the Star City Games are bad. I'm just saying, like, as an executive with WotC, how could you not just think it's the greatest idea ever to just steal this idea.
Yeah. Well, we'll see how it all plays out. I mean, you know, it's also going to impact what happens with the Wizards Play Network too, right? So all the local stores and such are all going to play, you know, a little bit differently, and they're going to get a bit more support and all that sort of shit. So we'll see what ends up happening. But, you know, I for one, I'm a little pissed off that they're kind of keeping everything all, you know, wrapped up tight. That's, I mean, maybe they're doing it to try to help the community. Obviously, you know, if they know that more things are happening, like we won't get the Magic Cruise double booking fiasco again and all that sort of crap, right? Like if that's the issue. But I don't know, man. It's pretty concerning.
But at the same time, like, wouldn't releasing the schedule a year in advance stop that from happening also?
Yeah, no, that's probably true too.
Like, I don't see how keeping the schedule under wraps, like, makes that problem better. Makes a double scheduling between Star City Games events, between Magic Cruises. I don't see how that makes it better. Right? Like, to me, that seems like it makes it worse that everybody else is kept in the dark.
Well, we'll see. I guess Wizards has got to know what they're doing. They haven't really fucked up too bad, you know.
Right.
They've got to know.
Yeah.
So we will just play it by ear and see what happens.
A lot of people are worried about the how much money they're charging for these GPs, and that you know, a lot of pros have tweeted that's negative EV. So
how much are GPs?
Like,
aren't they like $35?
They're getting higher than that.
Yeah, yeah. For constructed GP, it's you know, gone to some pros' attention, like that it's 40, right? So they're
wow.
Like, and that's, I think it's the same thing for a sealed one. So they're like, what's going on? Why is it, you know, more expensive?
Yeah.
Yeah, why would it be more expensive? Especially for sealed. That doesn't make sense because you're getting the same product. They did that with Fat Packs too, right? They raised the price of Fat Packs. And they tried to justify it by adding one extra pack and some garbage cardboard, right?
Right. So I don't know how it's going to, and how the turnout's going to be for each, you know, particular GP. But I hope there's just more than one Canada. That'd be sweet.
Yeah. I hope there's, yeah, exactly. Like, I think, it, like, because how many GPs are there now? 20? 12?
I wouldn't be able to tell. Like, there's always a bunch overseas, right? So,
yeah. But, like, let's say there's 10. To go to 20 and not have any in Canada, I'd be pretty bummed.
Yeah.
And, like, hopefully the West Coast can get some love. Nothing against you guys, but, like, you know, GP Toronto, GP Montreal, and then like GP, you know,
we'll get Nationals. Hill.
Yeah, like, and then you get Nationals. Like, it'd be nice if we could have a GP Saskatchewan, GP Alberta, GP, well, fuck Vancouver, but, you know, and Manitoba. Nobody cares about them. But.
All right. So.
Nice.
I guess we're going to wrap this up.
Looks that way.
Shadows. We've been talking for a long time. It's been a dry meta-analysis, but hopefully somebody finds it useful.
Definitely.
Jesse, go first.
I'm going to give the wife plug. I'm going to give a plug to... Man, it feels like there's so many people. I just should write them down.
I always think that too.
Yeah, just like people helping me with my brews and like testing and running my decks, man. Watchwolf 92, man, from MTGO, ripping up the dailies with the Mindhammer list. That's awesome. Getting me some shit. What am I trying to say? Give me some
recognition.
Recognition. Thanks, brother. So I'll give a shout out to the wifey and the Watchwolf 92. And actually, a big shout out to Marshall from Limited Resources. Man, he's been so helpful with like so much testing, just like spending time actually playing games with me, always helping me with input. He's my voice of reason as far as like not going any further with bad ideas. So much love to Marshall, and I'll leave it at that.
Uh, Nice. All right, well, I'll volunteer to go next. Shout out to Carterography. We had a good run on Moto there the other day. It was pretty good. Wife plug for sure. Yeah, I got to echo that sentiment too.
Wife plug.
I got my my package for my business trip today, finally, and she's like extra bone that she's not able to go, so that was pretty shitty. Shout out to Marshall. Like, same thing, man. Like, that guy has been so good to us. Like, he's been jamming on Moto with me as well, and we've been kind of conferring on our lists, and I think we've kind of locked into to the same deck type, and we're just trying to get there in terms of the sideboard, so that's fantastic. Shout out to all the tweeps, man. Like, seriously, Twitter is fucking amazing, and I love having all of you guys on Twitter. It just makes my day every day. And thank you all for listening, because without you guys, it, like, really just doesn't make sense for us to do this. So we really want your support on this, and make sure that this episode is, like, the most insanely downloaded episode ever. And comment the shit out of it on both the websites, because this, like, crazy talk beating us in comments bullshit, that's got to stop. Like, you're fucking A-Team listeners. You better represent. Let's go.
Yeah. I don't need Jonathan Medina filling up my Twitter cast with bullshit.
So with that, Jay, take it away, man. It's all you.
Okay. Well, let's give a shout out to a... let's do wife plug for sure. I know it's not... wife plug! I know it's not easy when you have a husband who is at home. So that's, you know... something that definitely I get on her nerves now because I'm always around. So wife plug for sure. I want to give a shout out to Wrong Way Go Back. So Neil, that guy's on Twitter. He helped me with a bunch of commander decks. He's just a cool dude. We've always kind of been aware of each other, but we haven't really talked up until recently. So he's a cool dude. So shout out to him. Shout out to Buddy Jordan from Red Deer, who was helping me with Valakut a little bit. And like I said, again, most of the tweeps, you guys know who you are, my tight circle of Twitter followers. Just lots of really good support and you know, just solid listening base. You guys are always helpful, so love you. And you guys, Dad and KYT and even Jesse can get some love. there was something else. Oh, and to everybody who won prizes and participated in the Get Me to Toronto thing, just again, just can't believe the amount of support. So it was really great. So again, just thanks to everybody. I just wanted to also do a little side note. I have been trying as hard as I can to get in contact with some people who have won some prizes, but I'm getting word haven't tried to claim them yet. So it'd be really great if you guys could maybe just send me an email and help me out with that, so that I can get that to the right people and they can get you your prize, because that's always shitty, winning a prize and getting it, you know, a year later. It's kind of irrelevant. And shout out to John Medina, because I can't stop thinking about your big man tit.
Rad.
Take it away there, sister KYT.
Okay. I'd like to shout out to anybody that said hi to me at the Canadian Magic Tour, especially MTG Cosmos, Luke, Mana Base, always Mana a Base. Pleasure to talk with you. Like, he's hilarious. Durfington,
he's a sweet dude.
Durfington's also really awesome. Then we have Ben C, who I got to play, and he just bashed my face. and that's about it for me this week. And I'll save more for our spoiler cast, I guess.
Nice. I want to also throw out, too, so we... Wrong Way Go Back. Neil did a fantastic job on Commander Cast the other day. So he was on one of their last, most recent episodes.
Oh, cool.
Benny Smith also did a really good job, so good for them. I want to also just make mention that I did have the privilege to record the Commander Cast with the guys last week, so I was able to talk about my Teneb deck at some greater length, and we got to talk about idiot trolls and forums, so listen up for that. It was a lot of fun. And Will Wheaton's on that podcast. If you don't believe me, listen.
No way.
You. Yeah, just listen to him. Guys, it's Will Wheaton, I'm telling you. Anyways, yeah, so other than that, hope you guys all do really well at your Nats Qs this week.
Yeah, especially if you're on Mindhammer.
Legion of Doom. Just call it Legion of Doom.
Dude, even Patrick Chapin has embraced Mindhammer, so I'm sorry, Legion of Doom crowd, you lose.
That just doesn't mean anything to me at all.
Okay.
Good luck, everyone.
Good luck, everyone.
Caw-caw!
Peace.
Bow, bow, ba-dow.